WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, that time of the week has come. It is Friday. I can't believe it's already Friday, but hey, time flies when you're having fun, right? And man, have we been having a lot of fun here on Current Sports. We got another fantastic show in store for you, as always. I am your beloved host, Al Martin. Today's show is filled with a lot of football talk as Michigan State hits the road once again to take on Indiana tomorrow. And this is kind of a special game for one person in particular, considering the fact that it is Mark D'Antonio's 100th game. Happy anniversary, Mark. Unbelievable milestone there. We'll chat about D'Antonio's legacy, give you a preview of MSU in Indiana. Also, we'll talk about some pro football as the Lions take on the New Orleans Saints. And we're finally going to get to this Ryder Cup Task Force story that we've been trying to, I guess, hold in our pocket all week. We have some strong thoughts on it. And I'm excited about my guest today. He is actually a former colleague of mine when I was a sports reporter over at WLNS-TV6, Mike Cohan. Yes, Cohan is now a beat writer, a high school beat writer for MLive.com. He's going to give us a preview of all of the high school football action taking place tonight. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, before we get to all of that, here is Jock DeWitt with your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners.
I'm Jock DeWitt. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for Friday, October 17. Ben Affleck visited the MSU football team. The Hollywood A-lister took a break from filming the upcoming Batman vs. Superman movie on MSU's campus to visit the Spartan football team. Affleck worked out at the football facility and visited the team for practice, giving them a little motivational speech before the team travels to Indiana to take on the Hoosiers. Redshirt sophomore Brandy Agee tore her ACL in an open gym session this week. The former honorable mention All-American at Cass Tech appeared in all 32 of the women's games last year, averaging 5.9 points and 3.6 rebounds. AG also tore her ACL in her right knee in 2012. The Spartan men's ice hockey team will open a two-game series with UMass tonight at Munn Ice Arena at 7 o'clock. They will also take on UMass at 7 o'clock on Saturday. The Spartans most recently tied with the University of Windsor 2-2 on October 7th in their final exhibition game. Women's soccer defeated Ohio State last night 2-1 in thrilling fashion. After a questionable call in the final minute that led to an Ohio State penalty goal with under a minute to play, Paige Wester scored the game-winning goal on a header. This was the Spartans' third straight win of the season. Lansing Sexton travels to Everett tonight as they attempt to remain undefeated atop the CAAC Blue Division. Other area action includes Grand Ledge versus East Lansing, Williamson versus Hazlitt, Lansing Catholic versus Burton Genesee Christian, and DeWitt versus Portland. The Giants defeated the St. Louis Cardinals 6-3 last night on a Travis Ishikawa walk-off three-run homer.
Travis Ishikawa hits one in the right! The Giants win the pennant!
San Francisco will meet Kansas City in the World Series with Game 1 at Kauffman Stadium on Tuesday, 8 o'clock. Saints tight end Jimmy Graham returned to practice Thursday, albeit in a limited role. Sean Payton remained optimistic that Graham would be able to play for the Saints Sunday when they take on the Lions at Ford Field. Patriots hold off the Jets. The special teams came up huge for New England on Thursday, blocking a Nick Folk field goal to preserve the win 27-25. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady threw for 261 yards and 3 touchdowns, while Jets quarterback Geno Smith accounted for 263 total yards and a passing touchdown. And those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Take it away, Al.
Jack. My man, appreciate that. Again, those are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Friday, October 17th. I want to give a personal shout out. On this day, my grandfather was born. Grandpa, Pops, happy birthday, my man. happy birthday. You're getting younger by the years, all right? Can't wait to see you this weekend. But, folks, we have a great show in store for you. I'm just seeing here some breaking news concerning the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons seemingly have traded Will Bynum to the Celtics for Joel Anthony. So how about that? The Pistons making some move again. The breaking news, Pistons trading Will Bynum to the Celtics for Joel Anthony. Of course, there were a lot of talks surrounded by Will Bynum when it came to head coach Stan Van Gundy saying that Will was the third point guard as far as progression went throughout all of training camp, with DJ Augustine and, of course, Brandon Jennings ranked higher than Will on that depth chart. So the Pistons decided to do something about it and pick up Joel Anthony. So there you have that. But, folks, it's going to be a busy show. I'm excited about it. I want to remind all the students out there that really after today's show, right at 2 o'clock, actually, there will be the Izzone campout that will be taking place from, to get this, 2 p.m. to 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Can you believe that? That's a long time. I've never done the Izzone campout. I always wanted to as a student. I know it's got to be a fun time as everybody camps out on, I believe, the Munn Field. But again, you know, this is, you know, I'm reading right from the state news here. Attendance at the 2014 Izzone campout is mandatory for students who have already reserved their tickets for the Izzone this season and want lower bowl eligibility. So you still have to go. You have to go if you want to, you know, set in stone your spot for lower bowl eligibility for this year's MSU men's basketball season. I can't believe that basketball season is right around the corner. Next week, of course, will be media day for the MSU men's basketball team. I can't wait for that. As you guys know, I'm a big hoop fanatic. Don't get me wrong. I love my football. But, you know, it's just something about the hardwood. I used to play, and there's nothing like covering MSU football in this area. I mean, getting to cover who I think is a shoe-in for the Basketball Hall of Fame and Tom Izzo, I mean, it's certainly a joy, and I'm sure many of you out there, especially the students, specifically the students, will be camping out trying to get your tickets for this year's season. One that is, you know, that has a lot of people speculating as to just how good will the MSU men's basketball team be this year. We talked earlier this week with it being Big Ten Media Day for all of the basketball programs. Many people, you know, joining and many coaches going out and meeting up and addressing the media on just how good their squads are going to be. And the writers' poll came out, and it looks as though the MSU men's basketball team, of course, is ranked third. Yes, not one, not two, but number three in the Big Ten Conference this season. Many people feeling as though this MSU men's team will be taking a step back when you lose components like an Adrian Payne, of course, Keith Appling, who really seemed to kind of fizzle out as the year went on due to that one injury. But that's another discussion, another topic for another day. And, of course, Gary Harris moving on to the NBA. Yeah, let's be honest. This MSU men's basketball team is certainly going to take a hit. But really, I mean, have we learned never to doubt the man that they call Tom Izzo? I mean, this program is always in national championship talks year after year after year. And, you know, it's interesting because Tom Izzo talked earlier this week on, you know, how this is a kind of a new experience that he hasn't experienced since, you know, his early tenure with the MSU basketball program, considering the fact that he has a lot of new personnel coming in. A lot of new players are going to be coming in and having to adjust to new roles, new positions very early in their basketball careers. But here's just a snippet from Media Day, Big Ten Media Day. Tom Izzo talking about the bottom of the Big Ten moving up and the top moving down.
Much better teams, and so it's the bottom. Nebraska, you know, they've come out of nowhere, and Tim's done such a good job there, and now they're going to be contenders. So I think the bottom again has moved up. The top, other than Wisconsin, has maybe moved back a little bit, but I think there's an 8-9-10 team race, and with who you play once and then where you play them. Muddled up is a good word. I got a couple other words that mean the same thing. There aren't as many letters, but I think it's, you've spoke well.
Yeah, so that's just a snippet from Tom Izzo, of course, at Big Ten Media Days, addressing just the Big Ten. And ideally for me, this is my personal opinion, I mean, preseason rankings, I don't harp on them too much because, I mean, how do you really know just how good any of these teams are going to be before the season starts? You know what I mean? So I'm not harping too much on it. Yeah, MSU may be third. We may be singing a totally different song 2 weeks into the season, okay? But that's just to get you guys kind of ready. And, again, for those camping out, do it safely. Dress warm. It is supposed to rain tonight. I'm supposed to be out covering some high school football tonight. So dress accordingly and have fun, most of all, folks. But, again, later on, just to remind you all, we have a great show in store for you. Later on in the hour, we'll be talking some high school football with Mike Cohan. Mike Cohan is an MLive.com high school sports reporter. We're going to be diving into some of the big games of tonight. Two, actually, that will be holding a lot of weight. Sexton taking on Everett, deciding, of course, that division championship, I guess you can say. Then the CMAC championship with PW and Fowler. We're going to dive into all of that and so much more with Mike. You do not want to miss that. And, yes, since it's Friday, as custom here on Current Sports each and every Friday, we're going to sort of reflect on the week that was in sports. Reflection Friday, that's right. We're going to give you our favorite sports stories of the week and maybe some sports stories that we didn't get to and, you know, give our take on why they were so memorable. So you don't want to miss that. And, again, the number to call if you want to call in and weigh in on anything that we talk about on today's show is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Just pick up that phone and your voice will be heard right here live on the air with me. All right. So now I join the man behind the glass, Alex Shark. How you doing, Alex?
I'm not doing well because apparently you are upset about me.
No, I'm not upset.
Yeah,
who know me, I never get upset. I'm a little salty, a little down and out. Because, I kind of put too much weight on this whole ESPN streak for the cash. I'm one of those believers that one day, 1 month, I'm going to pull out ESPN streaks for the cash and going to be that winner that you see flying across your screen, okay, when you check it at the end of the month. But, you know, I had a streak of 9. Alex, I still love you. Come on, man. I mean, stuff like this happens. It's impossible to predict sports, okay? Predictions are, I don't put too much weight on them. But I was at 9. I had rattled off 9 straight. And I asked your advice on the Patriots and Jets game. And they had, one of the bets was, you could pick the Jets winning or losing by single digits or the Patriots winning by double digits. So I got your take on it. And, I had another game I was going to hit on, which if I did, I would have been at 10. But we're not going to go there. But I asked your opinion, and you told me to choose the Patriots. I kind of bought into it, and now my streak is at loss 2. So it's all good though, brother. Stuff happens. Did I ever tell you the Fred Heumann story? I had to ever tell you about that, about the NCAA attorney. I'll save that for another day. So Fred, at the end of the day, I should have just went with my gut. But hey, it happens. But happy Friday, man. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Yeah, that other game was a shot in the dark, but we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, let's keep this train moving.
Yeah,
let's talk some MSU football. Of course, Michigan State football. They take on Indiana tomorrow. On the road, and you know what? This game, means a lot for a certain person, and that certain person being the head coach of the Spartan football team, Mark D'Antonio. It is Mark's 100th game. 100th game here in East Lansing. How about that? That's exciting stuff, right?
What a legacy. And you know what? He came here, he kind of turned the program around that we're going to beat Michigan. It doesn't matter who we're going to recruit. Fred Heumann, your former boss, always said this, that it doesn't matter the kind of recruits you get and the ones you don't. At the end of the day, D'Antonio came here with a vision. Michigan State was always in the headlines for the wrong reasons. Now you look at it 100 games later, total turnaround, Al. Total turnaround with the program. And guess what? Mark D'Antonio is probably one of the top coaches in college football at the end of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you win a Rose Bowl, yeah, definitely his name is certainly up there. And, yeah, and you just to really just briefly talk about Mark D'Antonio's legacy. I mean, it's truly remarkable seeing, D'Antonio, who came to this program, took over November 27th of 2006, and to see just the year-to-year progression on how he's really changed the culture of MSU football and the national perception that, when people look at Michigan State's football program, I mean, what immediately they think. And, Mark D'Antonio, really his attitude, I love his attitude because, one, first off, when you talk about Mark D'Antonio's personality, there was this thing going around, especially last season on the brink of MSU's Rose Bowl season, There was this, you know, there was this perception going around that Mark D'Antonio doesn't have a personality. He's just kind of real black and white on the sidelines. He's real stern. But a lot of people don't know. I love covering Mark because he's a really clever, funny guy. Those that really know him and cover Mark on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, I mean, a lot of the beat writers can tell you, a lot of other media around this area can tell you, Mark is a very witty guy, and I love covering him. He has his own, I guess you could say, humor that really is relatable on so many different levels. I love his personality and his overall attitude when it comes to winning. What I love about Mark D'Antonio is that he is never a panic type of a guy. No matter what seems to go wrong, no matter what criticism he gets from guys like you and I on radio shows and in the papers, D'Antonio sticks to his guns and kind of puts a twist on things, whereas, okay, yeah, we might have had a bad game here or there or a bad quarter, but hey, at the end of the day, this is what we believe in and we're going to stick to it. And, you know, it's that type of personality that just protrudes anytime you talk to Coach D, anytime he's in a presser. Any type of adversity, doesn't seem to faze him. And, you know, looking at his coaching staff, this is another recipe to Mark D'Antonio's success and speaks a lot and speaks volumes as to how he's been so successful, is his coaching staff. I mean, look at this. This is a coaching staff that really has stuck together. I mean, really five out of the nine guys that Mark D'Antonio stuck with when he first took over this program back then in 2006. I mean, guys like Mike Tressel, Harlan Barnett, Pat Narduzzi, Staten, you know, Dave Warner. I mean, those are all guys that have been riding and dying with MSU football since D'Antonio has gotten here. That says a lot that you're able to keep that coaching staff intact year to year to year, integral parts to their success. So that speaks volumes as well. And then just look at the track record. I mean, the proof is in the pudding, baby. I mean, when you talk about, you know, ever since Mark D'Antonio was here, two Big Ten championships, a Rose Bowl win, something that hasn't been accomplished since the 80s. I mean, man, oh, man. I mean, Mark D'Antonio's name deserves to be amongst some of the best coaches, not even just football here at Michigan State, but one of the best coaches in Spartan lore history, period.
Yeah, and it was rumored that Pat Narduzzi last year was in reports about Connecticut taking a head coaching job there, and he was rumored at some other places. Mm. But at the end of the day, you're right. The fact that these coaches, even though they're winning, I'm sure they've had looks at other schools, probably as defensive coordinator positions, especially when you're talking about Staten and Barnett, and those are guys that are position coaches that might get the nod to go cover be a coordinator at a school. So to keep them here with two winning seasons, potentially going on three this year, that says a lot.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, the loyalty they have for Coach D.
And he said it. Yeah. It's a destination. It's a legacy at Michigan State. This isn't a one-stop Nick Saban kind of thing. This is a legacy here.
Took a little jab at Nick there. Okay, I like that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's ideally at the end of the day. So, hey, Coach D, congrats on your 100th game. Hopefully it's a W, right? Now, going into that game, MSU in Indiana, MSU playing on the road. You know what? There's some interesting takes away from this game because, of course, at the beginning of this week, we found out that Indiana's starting QB, Nate Sudfeld, would be out for the rest of the year. How about that? It's crushing news. Crushing news for Indiana. Now you look at this game with sort of different lenses because this is one of those games that I kind of circled on Michigan State's schedule and said that, okay, you know, I think this would be one to watch for. This would be one to watch for. Michigan State playing on the road. Indiana could possibly give Michigan State some troubles here. Now, throwing in a freshman quarterback who has virtually no experience, it changes this story. It totally changes the story. Looking at various media outlets, it's being told that Xander Diamont will be the guy. He'll be the starter, at least, on Saturday. No experience. And looking at it, Michigan State, if you are Pat Narduzzi, you have to be salivating at the mouths. You have to be, I mean, Pat Narduzzi has got to have a huge grin on his face when looking at the situation that the Spartans are walking into now. Because, you know, you have this freshman quarterback, Michigan State, I guarantee you, they're going to put a lot of pressure on Xander throughout that entire game. Michigan State, if you look at it, they're first in the Big Ten and sixth nationally with 22 sacks on the year. This is a Spartan defense that gets at you. And if they, you know, taste any blood in the water, which they're tasting very, very early with the freshman QB being behind center, you better believe that, yeah, you're going to see a lot of blitz packages. You're going to see a lot of rushes on this QB. How he deals with it, hey, who really knows? We haven't really seen Xander play, to be honest with you. But, I mean, it's just a tough situation for a freshman to come in when you got to play one of the best defenses in the nation. Now, for Indiana, I think they got to try and run the ball, if anything. I mean, you can't place the game in a freshman quarterback's hand, so to speak. Indiana has to try to put it on the ground, even though, again, you're playing Michigan State, which has, you know, if you're talking about the rushing attack, Michigan State are fifth in the nation when it comes to run defense. They only allow 2.88 yards per carry. They're giving you nothing on the run game. So at the end of the day, I mean, looking at, you know, a few predictions here, just to sort of put in perspective how many people perceive this game to go, which I have to, you know, really agree with. What people are seeing nationally, Michigan State, I believe the line on this game, if I can get to it here, come on, load. This is internet. I tell you, internet. All right, Vegas has Michigan State by 16 points. 16 points. On ESPN, the worldwide leader, everybody has predicted that Michigan State will pull out this game. Bleacher Report has predicted that MSU will win 40-21. Athlon has MSU by an average of 25 points. So everybody's predicting this one to be a blowout. I feel as though that will happen as well. If you're Indiana, I mean, it's just really a tall order to be dealt on the brink of this game with your starting QB out. I mean, that's really the big storyline for me in this whole thing. But, you know, there are a few numbers I want to bring up, but what is your overall thoughts, initial thoughts on how this game will go, Alex?
Yeah, the thing is Michigan State's defense won't have any problem. That's what I get out of it. And they've still been resilient. They're still one of the top defense. It's if Michigan State's offense can put points up on Indiana's defense. Granted, sure, Indiana's defense still falls within that top 100 in the country. I think they're 49 is what I saw last week. So, granted, they're still not a horrible defense like they've been in the past. They've been a lot of improvements. You know, they're having this coach, he's kind of had everything under his wing now for a year. So I think he kind of knows what he's getting himself into with Michigan State's offense this year. And really, Connor Cook has been harping on it every week, Al. If he can hold on towards the end of the game, know the kind of formations that the defense is throwing at him. You saw what happened last game when Purdue dropped the safety down to the flat, and that's how they got that interception. Him kind of reading the defense, seeing in advance what's going on, so there aren't any late game collapses like there may have been before.
Yeah, you know, in another aspect to, you know, we've been praising the play of Connor Cook so far this season. Something that really stands out to me is, I don't know if you knew this, Alex, but did you know that Cook has only been sacked 3 times this season?
That's amazing.
3 times this season, Connor Cook has been sacked. I mean, that speaks volumes of the offensive line and just the overall pocket presence that Cook has had this entire year. And you know what? He's been sacked 3 times this season. It's the fewest in the entire nation. And all 3 sacks were given up against Oregon. So just one game. Just one game is when Cook was sacked 3 times. That's unbelievable. So Cook would certainly do work. But ideally, I'm going to look at how, you know, this Spartan team comes out now, having 2 games where in the fourth quarter, they just kind of went completely silent and kind of opened the door for Nebraska and Purdue to sort of make a game out of things. How they play throughout an entire game is going to be key here. Looking at the Spartans per game averages at home versus on the road, looking at points scored, Michigan State averages 50.3 at home, away 36. Now, granted, it's a small sample size, seeing as though this is, you know, there's not many, Michigan State hasn't played many games on the road this year, but points allowed, they've allowed 14 points at home, 38 on the road, average score margin, plus 36 at home, negative 2.5 away. I mean, and rush yards allowed. I mean, this is big, too. 49 at home. Only 49 yards on average at home. 151 away. So I think this will be a staple game, a chance for Michigan State to go against the law of averages when looking at and comparing and contrasting those numbers. And I think they'll come out, you know, with the eye of the tiger. I think Michigan State wins by at least 15 points in this game.
Yeah,
Alex,
it's going to be big. The Ben Affleck talk, man, that's going to do it. Ben Affleck motivating him. That's it. That's
Batman.
It.
When Batman comes and talks to you, that's pretty big, huh? So what are you taking? If you had to give me a score prediction on this game.
I'm going to say it's going to be 49-14.
49-14?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think a lot of points will be put up.
All right. All right. Well, I want to get your thoughts and predictions on this, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page of WKAR_sports. Let's hit the break. Later on, we'll dive into the Lions and Saints and so on and so forth. But I definitely want to get to our guest for today's show. In just a sec, we're going to be talking some high school football. Don't touch that dial. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Hey, what's up, beautiful people? Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Friday. Happy Friday, folks. Yes, the weekend is right around the corner. Probably got about, what, 4 more hours until 5 o'clock hits, and you can clock out and enjoy the weekend. But hey, we're always working here on Current Sports. I'm excited about tonight. Each and every Friday night, of course, is high school football. I just can't believe that the season is already about to end here. I think we're about to approaching week 7 now. I mean, unbelievable stuff, folks. And I'm sure many of you will be going out to some games and enjoying, Michigan high school football action. Is one of my favorite beats to cover. It's great stuff. And we have a special guest joining us here to give us sort of a preview of some of the high school football action that will be taking place tonight. He is certainly a dear friend of mine, actually a coworker of mine when I was at WLNS TV6, Mike Cohan, who is now over at MLive.com as a high school sports reporter. Mike, how you doing? Your first time being on?
Yeah, it feels good, Al. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks a lot. And I think you have an interesting story about how we met, I guess, huh?
Yeah, so I understand Fred's been on the show before, and he may have told his side of this, but I have the behind-the-scenes side.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
When we worked together as a producer, and so I was the guy in the booth doing a lot of the work, kind of like Alex here. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we first met, you were an intern.
I was an intern.
Yeah, you were an intern. And we would do the screen test where you would go out and do a sports segment, and it didn't go over the air. It was just something that you
yeah,
could
do. Yeah, for my resume tape, trying to apply for jobs, right.
And we watched and said, this kid has a lot of potential. He's pretty raw. He has a lot of potential. And then you came back, and you were in the sports department. And I remember the first show you did, I was either a 6 or 11. I got
bounced between the two. Oh, I was so nervous.
And yeah. You were. But and remember, just before you went on air, a bunch of us in the back, who we're all kind of grumpy people, we're like, oh no, this is not going to go well.
Uh-oh.
When you finished, we all looked at each other and went, that was pretty amazing, especially
Get
for
out,
a first
really?
Time out. It was.
I never heard that story. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks a lot, Cohan.
No, I don't think any of us ever told you that. Yeah, it was, and we knew you were going places, so it's no surprise that you're here now.
Oh, man. Thanks a lot, Mike. And you know what? I never forget that sports broadcast because it was my first time anchoring, my first time being on live TV. Usually for a 6 o'clock, newscast, for the sports guys, we show up around 3 o'clock, have 3 hours to prep and go do the show.
Yeah.
I never forget. I showed up at around 9 a.m. for a 6 p.m. sport, because I wanted to be so ready. I went over my script like 20 times that time. Oh, but as you see, folks, me and Mike go back like two flats in a Cadillac, baby, all right? But, hey, you're doing outstanding stuff over at MLive.com now, Mike. I want to dive into the high school football scene and kind of give us a preview of, first of all, the season. Mike, I mean, you've been out just about each and every Friday night covering, a lot of Michigan teams. What's been the biggest surprise or surprises for you this season?
I think just how good Lansing Catholic has been so far this year. I thought they would be pretty good. They have exceeded my expectations.
They have.
And, they have a really strong team. Tony Poljan, their quarterback, and he also plays on the defense as a safety. And Tony Palmer, their running back, who I believe also plays on the defense. These guys are really good athletes. And with Poljan, his calling card has, for the most part, been basketball because he's very tall. He's a very, very large kid. Mm-hmm. A lot of coaches, I think, would try to split him out and use him as a receiver. But instead, he's used his height and used his size to become a pocket passer. And he's done really well at that. And even as a junior, he has led that team pretty far. I mean, they're still undefeated at this point. They've played well every single game. definitely exceeded my expectations. I thought they would be good. I didn't realize they would be this good.
Yeah, certainly. And it also speaks volumes to just how good of a coach Jim Ahern is. I mean, he's a local legend around this area. I mean, Lansing, he always has, you know, Lansing Catholic at least competing each and every season. Now, looking at, you know, on that same notion, if you will, I know Lansing Catholic played Williamston last week for the CAAC white title, and they just kind of just romped on them, 50-14 in the final. How surprising was that? Did you think Williamston would at least put up a bigger fight than that?
Yeah, I was shocked when I saw the score. I was up at Sexton. For the game there, and I just kind of looked around and said, or at East Lansing, rather, I apologize. And somebody said, yeah, the final score, 50-17. And I did a double take. Like, did you misspeak on that one?
Right.
You know, Williamston has had a really good season, too. And you know, there are two teams in the area with one loss that I think are absolutely outstanding teams, St. John's and Williamston. Both teams, their one loss is to a really good team. In the case of St. John's, obviously, it's DeWitt. And they, you know, they're not bad teams now because they have one loss. They are still really good teams. I expect them both to go pretty far in the playoffs as well.
Definitely. And you talk about Coach Kirsten over at Williamston. I mean, he's actually was named along with Dan Bogan from the Mid-Michigan area, high school Detroit Lions high school coach of the week. That's great stuff. Now, on that same note, now looking at Sexton, I mean, my goodness, undefeated squad. You talked about how you were there last week. I mean, what makes Lansing Sexton's football team, the powerhouse that Dan Bogan has over there, what makes them so good, Mike?
I think Bogan is a large part of it, and you know, he's been around for quite a while, and he knows the game, and he knows high schoolers. I think that's one thing that goes overlooked so often with a successful coach. It's one thing to know the game and know the X's and O's and understand, okay, I have this kind of talent, I should do this with it. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Bogan, I think he just understands kids, and he's able to get the most out of them. Now, in his case this year, he has a ton of talent.
Yeah, he does.
You know, Avante Bell and Javon Ray, they're both outstanding. I think either one of them could put up 1,000 yards on their own with pretty much any team in the area. And then Malik Mack, their quarterback, you know, he's been outstanding, and he's a good decision maker. And you don't see that all the time in high school. Sometimes a kid is at quarterback and they do things, and time again you go, that wasn't the right move.
Right.
But with Mack, that's not the case. He is able to make progressions, and he's able to play the position very well. Bell is just he's a workhorse. You know, he gets out there and rolls over people. And piles up yards with, you know, people hanging on him. You know, he's like those extra 2 or 3 yards, that's his thing.
Right.
Ray's a little bit smaller, but he's a little bit speedier. And if he finds an edge, he's gone. I mean, he is just so fast. And on defense, too. I mean, all those guys also play in the defense, and they're pretty strong. They also have a good line, too. Mm-hmm. I've seen a couple lines this year, even in the CAC Blue, that I thought were a little bit stronger, but they've done pretty well, especially as the season's gone on.
Yeah, certainly. And tonight, of course, Sexton will be taking on Lansing Everett, Marcel Carruthers and company. And Marcel's team, I mean, they've only lost one game within the conference season. I mean, what do you expect is going to happen tonight? I mean, is there any chance that Everett will put up a fight and try and etch on that record for Sexton?
I think so. And you know, I always like to tell people the other team watches tape too. And last week at East Lansing, Sexton fell behind early, and it was mostly on the play of their defense. They did not come out and make plays the way they should have, and they fell behind. And of course, they were able to hold on for the win. And the offense really kicked it into gear. Mm-hmm. And I think Carruthers, I mean, he probably had people there and saw what happened, and they'll try their best to exploit that. You know, Lane Porter, their quarterback, I have not had an opportunity to see him this year, unfortunately. And but I'm looking forward to it because he's a sizable kid, and he's going to be able to put up some yards. It's just a matter of how many and whether or not Sexton can keep him out of the end zone.
So if you have to give a prediction, what would it be, Mike?
I've already made my prediction, actually.
Nice.
It's 29-22, Sexton. I did my prediction piece yesterday morning, and it was so hard because I could see Everett winning this. I mean, if Everett won by a couple points, I wouldn't walk away and go, wow, that I didn't think that would happen.
Right.
What I don't think will happen, I don't think Sexton's going to blow him out of the water. I think it'll be a pretty close game, and I figure Sexton by a touchdown.
All right, well, there you have that. I also want to get your thoughts on another game. What we're dubbing as our current sports game of the week, the CMAC Championship tonight. PW and Fowler. Tyler Beck is particularly our intern here. He's particularly excited about this one. He actually has that as also our game of the week. Who you got in this one? This is very intriguing. It seems as though each and every year, the CMAC always comes down to PW and Fowler. I mean, what do you think about these two teams?
Yeah, obviously the tradition and history are there for both schools. You know, even when I was growing up, and I went to Grand Ledge in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Even back then, Fowler was going to state championship games time and time again, and PW is always right there with them. Both teams doing as well as they are is not surprising by any means.
Right.
And that part of mid-Michigan, you get a lot of these families where they have, you know, cousins who go to the other school, and they take it personally. It's really fun to watch. You don't get that with the CAC schools very much. You don't get that very personal aspect of it.
Right.
The smaller schools like Fowler.
Why do you think that is, though? Just because it's so small, the community is more well-knit together?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And you know, Fowler, PW, Portland St. Patrick, Fulton, that area, they take it very personally, and it's pretty neat. I was talking to somebody a couple days ago about this game exactly, the Fowler PW game, and the guy I was talking to, he said, you know, they basically shut down the towns, and everybody shows up, and I'm like, isn't that great? You know, conversely, a school like some of the Lansing schools, you can show up to one of their games, and there are fewer people in the stands than there are at those games out there, and those schools are so much smaller.
Right.
I mean, Fowler and PW, you know, a graduating class is usually somewhere between like 80, maybe 100.
Right.
And in the Lansing schools, it's much larger than that. But the people out there, they love their football. They always show up for especially the Fowler PW game.
It is certainly a very much a family atmosphere and a friendly rivalry between schools like that. So in your prediction piece, I mean, did you have a prediction on PW and Fowler? What you think is going to happen tonight?
Yeah, we actually at MLI, we don't cover either one of those schools. And it really disappoints me. We did last year. And for some reason this year, someone who outranks me over at MLI said, now we're gonna drop those schools. I'll tell you right now, I'll pick Fowler by 1 point, and that's mostly because I have so many friends growing up who went there.
Gotcha.
But I'll tell you, both those, it's going to be a great game. I'll tell your listeners right now, if you just, if you don't have any dog in any fights around mid-Michigan as far as high school football, the Sexton Everett game will be a really good one to watch, but I think the Fowler PW game will be a more exciting game to watch because, again, it's two really good schools, and they both take it so personally.
That is so true. We're talking with Mike Cohan of MLive.com. He is a high school sports beat reporter over there. Now, you know, Mike, you know, I read one of your pieces, and you kind of broke down about, you know, the amount of teams from mid-Michigan that can still make the playoffs. You talked about how 14 of 21 mid-Michigan teams can still do that. What teams have the biggest uphill battle in trying to make that dream happen?
I think at this point, I think Dansville's one of them. Dansville or Langsburg, either one. They play each other. It's kind of like that third place game in the CMAC, but there's still quite a bit on the line for both those schools. If Dansville beats Langsburg, they're in. I mean, it gives them 6 wins. But if they lose, then they play Maple Valley, and Maple Valley haven't done very well this year. And if they lose to them, that drops them to 5-4. And that puts them in playoff point territory, and they need to win because they don't have a whole lot of playoff points because their wins have come so far against teams with a 10-25 record, and that just doesn't get you a lot of points as far as the MHSA playoff system goes. Langsburg, on the other hand, I think they play, I believe it's Durand, their final game, and Durand's won one game this year. And that's,
now, Mike, with those playoff points, I mean, how does that work for our listeners that don't know?
Yeah, this has been in place for quite a while now. I think it's been tweaked a couple times, but the playoff point system, all the teams in Michigan are put into the four classes, A, B, C, and D. And when you win or lose to teams in each of those classes, you get a certain amount of points. If you're a Class A team, that beats a Class D team, you're not going to get a lot of points. Mm-hmm. But if you beat a Class A team, you probably will. And conversely, if you are a Class A team and loses to a D team, that's definitely not going to get you many points.
Right.
But if you beat a D team, it's also not going to get you many points either. And for a school like Dansville, they're a Class C school. They've got some of these wins against some smaller schools and some other C schools. And because of their records, I mean, they're just not getting a whole lot of points out of that system. Mm-hmm. I like that system. I know there are people who will say, I don't like that. You know, it makes it all a computer system then. Of course, you know, college football, we've heard that argument for years.
Oh, boy, left and right, yeah.
But, you know, someone has to get cut for the playoffs because you only have so many teams in. And, you know, unlike other sports where, in basketball, everybody makes the postseason. Mm-hmm. I mean, there isn't a point system. And because of football, if everybody got in, I mean, heck, that would add 2 weeks to the season.
It would.
You can't do that. So this is, I guess, the most fair, maybe democratic way of doing it. And, like it or not, that's the way it works.
Definitely. All right, Mike. Well, where are you going to be tonight, my man?
Sexton Everett. I'm looking forward to it. This will be the fourth time I've seen Sexton this year, and it'll be the first time I'll get to see Everett. Looking forward to seeing Marcel and his boys. That guy has, kind of like Bogan, he's had a really good run and just done really good things at Everett.
Yes, both of those. I mean, Bogan and Carruthers. I mean, just the amazing consistency from year to year to year. It's been truly amazing. So that's going to be definitely a great game. And how can people, look at your work and read your work, Mike?
Yeah, mlive.com/Lansing. Every Monday, I do a ranking, which I guess last week will probably be, or next week will be the last one. And then every Thursday, do predictions, and then catch the stories on Friday night.
There you have it. And Mike, before we get off the air, I'm very intrigued in your story and how you actually, kind of stumbled upon covering high school sports in this area. Because again, we were colleagues at Channel 6, man. I mean, how in the world did you, have that itch to go cover high school sports and end up at MLive? Talk about that journey really briefly.
Well, I got an undergrad degree, and actually two undergrad degrees from Grand Valley in broadcasting and journalism. Mm-hmm. And my first job out of college, I worked for the Grand Haven Tribune for about 2 years. Then I came to the State Journal for about 5 years. I was a high school reporter there while I was in graduate school here at Michigan State, actually, getting an MA in journalism. And after a few years, LSJ made some cuts. I ended up in Jackson for about 5 years covering sports at the Citizen Patriot, which is a sister publication of MLive, actually. Mm-hmm. And then a few years ago, they made changes too. And then we ended up working together over at WLNS. And after a while there, I said, I think I want to get back into doing high school sports. And so I got a hold of Megan Holland, the managing editor over at MLive, and she was like, "Sure, let's take you on." And so this is my second year with them, and second year with MLive Lansing, if you include my time at in Jackson. Mm-hmm. I've worked for MLive or its parent company for about 7 years now, and I'll tell you, the guys in Jackson too are doing good stuff. I know some of your listeners might be down that way. The Leslie Eaton Rapids area, and Matt Wenzel, the sports editor there, he and I worked together at the State Journal back about 10 years ago, and he's new to the area, but trust me, he's been in the game for quite a while.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I tell you what, Mike, you're doing one fantastic job. We definitely have to have you on as when the playoffs start and so on and so forth. It's been a pleasure. Again, folks, Mike Cohen, MLive.com, high school sports reporter. Mike, thanks a lot, my man.
Oh, thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll give you a Lions and Saints preview, as well as sort of reflect on some of the biggest sports stories this week. Reflection Friday, folks. You don't want to miss that. All of that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. Hey, what's up, good people? I have to remind you all very quickly that, hey, if you missed Current Sports TV last night, as I sat down with Jamel Hill, who is, of course, an MSU alumni,
who now is with ESPN, is the co-host of ESPN's Numbers Never Lie. It was a great, great sit-down with her. She was here around homecoming. Got to steal a bit of her time. We aired that episode last night. If you missed it, just simply go to video.wkar.org and check out that episode along with any episode that we've done in current sports TV history. It's the hub of all our shows, so you don't want to miss any of that, folks. It was a great sit-down. All right, now we transition to talk a little pro sports. Actually, you know, we're going to bring Tyler Beck on the air with his tie. My man, how are you doing?
A lot better than the last time you talked to me, Al.
Yeah, you've been sick, my man.
Yeah, I mean, like we were talking about before the show, I was sick before this past weekend when I went down with my mom to visit my brother in Florida. And
yeah.
So I'd see the happiest place in the world, Disney World, and Universal Studios.
Oh, you went to Disney World? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
how was it?
We did 5 parks in 2.5 days.
5 parks in 2.5 days? Oh, my goodness. Are you a big rider, and you go on all the rides and stuff like
that?
Oh,
yeah, man. If they build it, I will ride it.
If they build it, you will ride it. That's because I'm the same way, too. I've never been to Disney World and all that kind of stuff. So, I haven't been to Universal Studios either. Never mind. I am certainly missing out. But, hey, glad to have you back in the saddle. And you're looking well. You're feeling well. That's good stuff. And Alex, of course, joins me. Alex, you ready to dive into some pro sports?
Yeah, let's hope I make the right picks this time.
Yeah. We'll see. Well, first off, let's start with the Lions. Of course, the Lions will be playing the New Orleans Saints. This is going to be an interesting game. Interesting game, to say the least. I mean, you have the league's number one ranked defense in the Detroit Lions going against the league's number two offense with Drew Brees and company. For me, some of the keys really briefly that I'm going to be looking at in this game is just you got to protect Matthew Stafford. And I'm not saying that this has all been on the offensive line. I think this has been some of the offensive line's problem. Some of it has to do with receivers not getting open. And thirdly, Matthew Stafford just has to know when to get rid of the ball. So it's kind of a three-headed monster when talking about this problem. I mean, Matthew Stafford has been sacked, you know, ideally more times than anybody in the league, any other quarterback in the league. So when looking at it, that has to change. You got to get the run game going. This looks to be Reggie Bush's return after sitting out last week, of course. You got to establish that. I'm looking to see a mix-up between Bush and Joik Bell. And with CJ, Megatron, yeah, Calvin Johnson, and Eric Ebron being out, I think Matthew Stafford has to, you know, do a good job of allocating the ball to all of his offensive weapons. In the end, I do think the Lions do win this game. What are your thoughts?
I think they'll win, too. My biggest thing with the offense, aside from protecting Stafford, Stafford needs to look at his tight ends more. You drafted Eric Ebron for a reason. You re-signed Pettigrew for that money for a reason. You drafted Pettigrew as a first round for a reason. So at the end of the day, they got to involve more of their offensive weapons aside from Theo Riddick and Golden Tate.
Yeah.
I mean, they drafted that to give Stafford plenty of options, and he's just not utilizing them to their potential.
Yeah.
So that, for me, is my biggest key on the offense. And the defensive side of the ball, aside from stopping the run, which they usually have no problem with their front four, they need to put pressure on Drew Brees more importantly, because that is a quarterback that can pick you apart. Sure, Jimmy Graham isn't having the best year of all, more recent New Orleans receivers too. But at the end of the day, they just need to pressure Brees as much as possible.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Ty, what's your thoughts on it?
Well, I think the Lions are going to win too. I mean, if you look at the Saints' schedule, they're 0-3 on the road. And the Lions, the most points they've given up at home is 17 to the Bills in that one, you know, wacky game where, I mean, Nate Freeze who was still the kicker for that? Or was it Henry?
I think it was Nate Freeze.
That's where he lost his job.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, you look at it, I'm a big believer of defense wins championships.
Yeah.
And defense is not the Saints' strong suit. It's the Lions right now. I got to go with the Lions.
Yeah, I got to go with the Lions as well. You know, with something so interesting that stands out to me in this whole thing, when talking about Drew Brees, what's amazing to me is how Drew Brees is among, you know, one of the league-leading quarterbacks as far as interceptions thrown is concerned. He's thrown 6 so far this year. But if you look at the past few games, I mean, he's thrown about, you know, 300 yards or better. I mean, that's saying a lot, that even though Drew Brees is a guy who deals with adversity very well, you're going to be dealing with a lot of adversity playing the number one ranked defense in the league on Sunday. I think Drew Brees, you got to watch him. I think you have to rush him as well, Alex. I do agree with that. You have to put pressure on Drew Brees. Don't, you know, make it very uncomfortable for him to work in that pocket. I think the Lions do. I think the Lions take this one. If I had to give a score prediction, I would say, give me 27-21 Lions.
All right, I like the Lions 23-17, but the most important that I think, I can't believe we haven't touched on this, Prater has to make his field goals. Darn it, he does. I mean, they can't wait anymore.
But you know what? Looking at last week, I mean, what do? He missed two of them from 40 yards or more, and he was 1 for 3, I know.
Yeah, but that's the thing. When you're playing good teams, you can't miss 40 yards. I mean, if you're missing 50, okay.
Yeah, you can't miss those. I mean, those have
college kickers can make 40s.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, the Lions, and you know, we could be talking about a totally different story. If the Lions have made it, let's say the Lions were perfect this season on kicks. I mean, my goodness, they would have beat the Bills, of course. And it would just be a problem that the Lions wouldn't have to deal with. The Lions fans have been spoiled for over two decades, having, of course, the great Jason Hansen as their kicker. To have a problem like this, first of all, it should not be a problem. A kicker has one job. You got to go out there and make kicks. And I agree. Prater has to come out there and make kicks. Ty?
Hell, they don't even have to be perfect. If they were, like, average, Jock, our resident Lions expert, corrected me. It wasn't Freeze. It was Henry that blew the game.
Oh, it was Henry. Okay, gotcha.
Buffalo. But, yeah, if they were just average,
right,
they would have at least one more win in the column. I mean, special teams is an oft-forgotten about part of football, but it's so important.
Exactly. And, you know, I was joking with Jack before we took the air today, you know, about an hour or two before we took the air at 1 o'clock. And, you know, I saw a quote from Prater saying, yeah, he's excited to be kicking indoors today. So, I mean, who wouldn't be, you know, excited to be kicking indoors, finally, with all the kickers that the Lions have been rolling through this season. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun game. Ty, what's your score prediction?
I got to go 26-24 Lions.
Ooh.
Hoping that Matt Prater comes through and gets those field goals.
Okay, that's a close one. That is a close one. All right, folks, again, we have less than 10 minutes left in the show. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll get to Reflection Friday in just a sec. Alex, you and I have kind of been chomping at the bit to get to this story. The Ryder Cup Task Force, they're pulling out all the stops, folks. The Americans have decided to put together a task force that includes, you know, former golf greats like Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and so on and so forth. Seeing as though it's bad right now. It is really, really bad as far as the Ryder Cup is concerned. The U.S. has lost 6 of the last 7 Ryder Cups to Europe. The last time the U.S. have won a Ryder Cup was in 2008, and prior to that, 2009. Alex, I love this idea. I love the idea because right now, let's be honest here, the Americans are sort of in a desperation mode because, you know, to lose 6 of the last 7 in anything, in any sport, when it comes to America, the U.S. of A, I mean, it just rubs you wrong. So I think the fact that they're bringing some of the, you know, some of golf's best to the table and trying to figure out what is going wrong and to try to correct it, I found it admirable to a degree. And I think it's needed.
Shaking my head, man. First of all, when you're making a committee, keep in mind that they are doubting Watson and the captains from this year that have selected their guys to join the team.
You don't think they
should
be?
True or false? They're doubting the captains.
Yeah, and I think they should be.
Second of all, you think they should be? Here's the thing about that. If you look at any other sport, I mean, this isn't the first time that captains pick teams. I mean, All-Star Game, sure, it's not the Ryder Cup. I get that. It's different. All-Star Game's kind of a showboat thing. But to kind of go on here and doubt the confidence of Team USA, there's a reason why they're losing, Al. The reason is because the golfers, after Tiger Woods, the best golfers aren't from USA. The best golfers are from Europe. And that's the way the sport is. It's the same reason why Jurgen Klinsmann is looking to extend Team USA outside of USA players. So to go on and say that you admire the fact that they're trying to solve it, does Michigan football have to get 5 guys in a room to solve what's going on with that?
This is
Does Team USA hockey need that to beat Team Canada?
Alex, this is a totally different argument than comparing it. First, I think I can't believe you compared it to the All-Star game, and then you go on to compare it to U of M football. This right here is totally different from any of those two examples.
I know
examples.
It's different, but it looks bad, man. It looks bad.
Yeah, because it is bad. I mean, this is just kind of calling it like it is. If you're losing year after year, and not just losing, getting blown out year after year at a game at which at one point the U.S. was highly competitive at, something needs to be done here. Let's go to the drawing board, do something about it, or try to do something about it, and try to figure out what's going wrong here. I do agree with you at the fact that Europe, just plain and simple, has more talent.
They have the best talent in the world right now when it comes to the game of golf. If you look at it, you know, guys like Martin Keimer, guys like Rory McIlroy, those are two guys alone who have simply just kind of dominated this past year in golf.
Right, but
the talent is there.
Sure.
But you can't just lay down. What do you want the U.S. to just lay down and do nothing about this
But that's
problem?
The thing. Of course they're going to try to do something about
it.
But it's not like a team of five guys can go and pick all the amateurs that aren't currently playing. It's not like there are guys that aren't on the tour or aren't on the Ryder Cup that are better than the guys. Now, they have the best guys in place each year. Not like they're picking the wrong guys.
Having the best of the best in American golf and sitting them down at the table to try and hash this problem out, you don't find that admirable that they're trying to do that?
I mean, I guess you could shake your head and say,
Then what should they do?
There's
Alex?
Nothing
What's
they
the
can
solution?
Do.
Okay.
The solution
See,
is
they need to
breed American golfers that are better. That's
the mentality that breeds losing. If you just sit there and say there's nothing we can do and just continue with this year after year getting flopped on by Europe, I mean, come on now. That's just kind of throwing in the towel, Tyler.
If I may, Al, I think what Alex is trying to say is that there's no quick fix to this.
Right.
That this is a long-term problem.
But at the same time, it's looking at, and I agree, I totally agree with that, but the fact that the U.S. is trying to do something, I find it admirable that they're saying, okay, well, this is a huge problem. We have an epidemic here, not a good epidemic at that. Let's sit down and try to figure out what's going wrong. I think this is sort of a window into the bigger problem. The bigger problem for me that I think neither one of us is thinking about right now is that American golf is dying. Point and simple. Every 48 hours, a golf course closes here in America. People aren't playing. Kids aren't playing like they used to. The phenomena of Tiger Woods, who brought so many people to the game, that's even dying. It says a lot about the state of golf here in America, and you got to try different things. I mean, for goodness sake, you got at Hawk Hollow, they have soccer golf going around right now simply because people don't want to play American golf. I mean, regular golf, I should say. They feel as though the game is too challenging. There was a huge report done by ESPN and HBO Sports where they're actually expanding the cup now.
Or
the cup is about to be expanded to 19 feet.
Or they're playing soccer golf or foot golf because soccer is just getting bigger, is what I would argue.
Either way, American golf is dying. It is simply dying, and with that being said, the exposure for our youth is not happening. Therefore, you're not having good golfers breed it because they're not playing on the course. That's the bigger problem here that I think will be addressed with this task force. And I do believe them coming to the table and trying to do this and trying to figure out what's going wrong will help in some sort of way. I love the idea. I love the idea.
I mean, it will help in some sort, but what are they going to do? Figure out how to train their golfers better? Like Tyler said, I agree. I think it's just what I'm trying to say. It's not a quick fix.
And I don't believe that the people who are sitting down at this table for this task force believe that it's a quick fix. I think they feel as though it's a step in the right direction, which I do agree with at the end of the day.
I agree, but I think do you think that it looks bad? Do you see what I'm saying? Where it
no,
could look
it's
bad?
Already bad. It can't get much worse, Alex.
There are plenty
How much worse can this get?
That's what you say about other dynasties. Look at the Royals.
Alex,
they didn't make the playoffs for 30 years.
Alex,
did they have guys sit down and need to hash this out?
It's gotten to the point where they have to try something here. It can't get much worse than losing six of the last seven. Come on now. It can't get much worse than where this program is right now. So why not come to the table and figure this out instead of just going year by year by year and you know, basically approaching it with insanity? You know, approaching year by year and expecting, doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting different results. I find it admirable. Folks, what do you think? Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot me a tweet at Al Martin WKAR, or go to our official Current Sports Twitter page at WKAR_sports. I will read your tweets or comments live on Monday's show. It's been a fantastic week. If you want to know, just kind of a quick reflection Friday, my favorite sports story of the week, if you haven't heard about it, Google it. Amari Stoudemire has been bathing in red wine, and it's helping his game. Hilarious story, folks. Go Google that one for you. Thanks so much for joining me on today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin. Again, you can listen to Current Sports on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic and safe weekend. Enjoy all the football action. And be easy, people.